Hey, this is Darrell Revis, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I'm your host today, Brian Bassett. Corey is not with us. He had to take the Friday off. So we'll be running solo today, but take heart. It's okay. We're going to have a couple guests on. First, we're going to talk to Brian Costello of the New York Post. Brian wrote a great article about basically, are the 2 years in, just like Rex and John Idzik were 2 years in when they were both fired, are the Jets better today than they were 2 years ago? And so he asked a lot of good questions, and we'll get a chance to dig in on some of the kind of points he made in that article. And then after that, we're going to talk to SNY's Ralph Vacchiano. Ralph is going to talk to us about Darrell Revis. Revis has been in the news a lot this week with all the, you know, does he still want to play? Does he want to quit? Ralph got to talk to him, I think, yesterday, Thursday, and had some good conversation with him. So we'll talk to Ralph about what he learned from Revis firsthand. But just a quick programming note, you know, be sure to check out the new episode of the Knicks Blog Podcast. Anthony Donahue and Mo Hamilton debate whether Derrick Rose deserved a contract extension or deserves a contract extension, and talk about the importance of the next 10 games on the next schedule. And just make sure, in case you don't know, to access this show and all the rest of the SNY.TV's original podcast, search for SNY.TV audio in an iPhone podcast app or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, Audio Boom, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all those sort of things. So with that, we're gonna start talking to Mr. Costello from The Post. Brian, thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So Brian, I'm curious. It was a great article. It was really great. Our producer Jeff and I were talking, kind of prior to the, you know, when we were, what are we going to do this week? And this article came up, and I think it was really well timed and really well written. What was kind of the impetus for writing this in your brain? Were you just thinking, okay? I mean, because I think that's what everybody was thinking, but I really thought you kind of put a fine point on it.
Well, thanks for the compliment. But, you know, it's kind of been in the back of my head for a few weeks now. You know, I mean, the funny thing about covering the Jets this year is I feel like we've been in the same spot for a while now. You know, it's like the same stories keep getting repeated and repeated. So my goal this week was like, all right, I'm not writing about the quarterbacks for a couple of days here. I need to figure something else out. And, you know, the thought that had been in my head, and I really wanted to just ask the question and not kind of come out and rip the organization and say, no, they're not. I'm leaning towards that they are in the same spot that they were 2 years ago. It doesn't feel like it's much better. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who are season ticket holders and things, and I was talking to some of them, and, you know, they're kicking around, like, who's going to be on this team in 2 years?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
And so, like, we're 2 years into this thing. If this was year one of the McCagnan-Bowles regime, and they went 3-8 and looked like they were going to be 3-13, I think fans would be okay saying, okay, you know, you expect a struggles in that first year and they're building through the draft. Okay. But they're 2 years in, they did this competitive rebuild thing where they, you know, brought in all these 30-year-olds to try to win now, and it didn't work. And now you're starting to look at it like, okay, well, who's the core of this team moving forward? Mm-hmm. If the idea is to build through the draft, you know, Idzik was fired after 2 years, and it was hard to evaluate his draft picks at the end of 2014. You know, it wasn't really fair to totally evaluate them. So right now, it's like, do we know any more about McCagnan's draft picks than we did about Idzik's? You have Leonard, who looks great. Idzik had Sheldon, who looked great. Beyond that, there's a lot of question marks. Darren Lee might be very good. I can't say that today. I don't know that. Lorenzo Malden might develop. I don't know that right now. We don't know anything about the two quarterbacks right now. So there's a lot of question marks. And then with Todd, you know, he had a strong first year, I thought. He handled the Geno thing well. You know, I thought he did some good things during the year. But this year has not been good. So I think fans have a lot of questions about Todd's, you know, game management, just like they did with Rex.
Yeah, and I think so let's kind of I think you're spot on, and that was just those are the thoughts I was having. So when we saw the article, I said, "Oh man, this is perfect." So let's kind of go through it a little bit by little bit. We won't spend too much time on this one because it's certainly overwrought, but the quarterback issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, so do you believe that Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty, or bringing back any of the two guys ahead of them are the answers for this team for the next 3 to 5 years? What, and if so, why? And if so, why not?
I don't think you can say anything about the two young guys right now definitively. We haven't seen them enough. But Petty, we've seen a little bit, more than Hackenberg at least. Petty played some decent time in the preseason. Hackenberg barely played in the preseason. And then we have the one game against the Rams to watch Petty. So I don't know what he is. I certainly don't know what Hackenberg is. But I the organization clearly doesn't think he is a guy who's ready to play now. Chan Gailey said this week he's a developmental player. I from reading between the lines, I don't think they want him to play next year. I think they'd like him to sit and watch next year. So those two guys, it's hard to say, no, they're not. But there's nothing that says right now, yes, they are either, that they're the future going forward. I think Fitzpatrick is gone. I think the Jets are tired of him. I think he's tired of the Jets. I think this offseason was a very acrimonious situation between the two sides. I think he came back because of his teammates. And then things haven't gone well this year. We know what his little speech was after the Ravens game. So right. I think he's gone. You never say never, so there's a 1% chance he's back. But I think he's gone. Geno's an interesting one to me because – I initially thought, there's no way Geno's coming
there's
back.
There's no way, right.
Somebody, who's knowledgeable was saying to me, like, well, why not? Like, what about, his market is not going to be robust.
Agreed.
He hasn't played well, and now he has a knee injury. So it's not like people are going to be banging down his door. Because I would think Geno would want to start over something. But if he doesn't have a great market, and then the Jets look around, and they do decide to go down this road of Brian Hoyer or a bridge quarterback, Josh McCown, that thing. Maybe they look at it and say, you know what? Geno's had 2 years in our system. You know that he's as good as these guys. Maybe we just go with Geno. The key, I don't know what their opinion of Geno, what McCagnan's opinion of Geno really is right now. You can never get a straight, honest answer from Mike, in my opinion. He's always saying, he's kind of always guarded. He's close to the vest, and I get it. So, I don't think there's a great chance Geno's back, but I'm not ruling that one out. But I don't think there's an answer at quarterback right now. They have no idea, especially if you're talking the window you're talking, 3 to 5 years, no way. They know what that is.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? Like you have to look at Geno Smith as a value play, right? Like this isn't something we're saying, wow, this is the greatest move, and we're committing to this guy for the future. But right, maybe he's a bridge. Maybe it's just you cannot say no to the value that bringing someone, to your point, who knows the system for 2+ years, would offer. But right, I'm with you in terms of the guys at the back of the roster, or back of the depth chart. They don't seem to be the answer. So now we've used our draft picks on these guys that we're not knowing if they're the answers. And to your point about, I don't know about Darren Lee. I don't know if Lorenzo Malden will be these guys. And then you talked about the draft and Leonard Williams fell in their lap and good for them.
And they get credit for that because Williams got ripped for Vern Golston. And everyone said draft him at 6. So they would get ripped if Leonard wasn't a good player. So they deserve credit even though he fell in their lap.
That's true. And so I guess my question is, you talked a little bit about McCagnan, you talked about those sort of things. I have not seen, though, I mean, hey, Robbie Anderson was a great undrafted find for this team, and they've got a couple other guys that, maybe they'll turn into something. But you talk about the core, you talk about who this team is in a couple of years. I wouldn't say that they've done a very good job drafting when other than, a couple of, the Leonard Williams or whatever. I don't see guys that were drafted in the 5th round or the 2nd round even that, that are going to be major contributors to this team for the next 5 years. I mean, what do you hear when you talk to folks, whether it's around the team or around the league? Like, do they feel like they have this core that we just can't see because we're on the outside, or are they just as uncertain as we are?
No, I mean, they don't think so. And look, it's hard to judge draft picks, all draft picks quickly. I think some of the guys at the top of the draft, you know pretty quickly what they are. But, you know, who knows what Brandon Schell is. Maybe he becomes a starting tackle in this league. We don't know what he is. But, you know, I'm just right now, the early returns, you know, no one's really turning your head other than Leonard. So, and to me, the Hackenberg pick is the pick. That's the pick of the Maccagnan era. He staked his job on that pick, in my opinion, because that's a second-round pick. You know, you can say what you want about Petty. Fourth-round pick to me is a lot different than a second-round pick. I feel like those first two picks are guys you want to have immediate. You want them to have immediate impact, and they, you know, especially in the Jets situation where they're at, and the Hackenberg is like, is he not going to play for 2 years? that seems like a pretty big gamble to me. And then when he does play, he better play well. If he falls on his face, I think McCaggy is going to be in deep trouble if that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was a reach where they picked him, and using important draft capital, especially where you've got things like, you know, offensive line or, you know, other places, outside linebacker that have to be filled and just aren't being filled. It was very unsettling when you have this guy that you got a couple, you know, last year, and, you know, maybe he'll be our future, but now we're kind of, you know, doubling down on this, you know, kind of a non-first round gamble, and those are tough. And so one of the other things you talked about was Todd Bowles too there. I mean, they got to 10-6 last year, lightning in a bottle, credit to them. But, you know, one of the things Corey and I often talk about on this podcast is not seeing the aggressive calls when you're on your opponent's 45, you know, and it's fourth and two, or, you know,
fourth and four against the Patriots, where he decided to get the field goal that was blocked.
Or, you know, taking a timeout, you know, so that you can get your defense set, and then Muhammad Wilkerson jumping off sides, you know, like, you know, in a crucial situation. And, you know, so those kind of things just seem to keep happening to this team. You talked about 12 man penalties and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, again, like what when you talk to folks, like what do you hear? Do you say, oh, you know, there's progress here, or no, it's just kind of the, you know, we're just going the same direction we've been going with Todd Bowles as a coach? Or, I mean, is it unraveling? You hear all these talks about, you know, the you know, he's going to lose the locker room if he doesn't start fits, or, you know, all these sort of things. Like what's going on? Tell us.
I don't buy that one at all, because frankly, this locker room isn't spirited enough to lose. Like it's kind of a dead locker room at this point. It's, you know, I think guys have been resigned, you know, some since Arizona, I think, you know, Pittsburgh, Arizona took a lot out of this team. And then, definitely since Miami. That was the end of the season, you know, when they lost that game. So, you know, I just don't get the sense that there's a big movement in this locker room. And also, the locker room understands how Fitz is played. They like him, but they understand the guy hasn't played well. I don't think they'd have a case to say, oh, don't go to Petty. But, no, I don't think Todd is in control. I don't think that's the issue. I mean, his game management has been rough, and I think this is something Jets fans have seen a lot of, because they keep hiring first-time head coaches, you know, in these situations for the first time, and also defensive-minded head coaches. To me, defensive-minded head coaches don't go for it on fourth down.
They
punt the ball and trust their defense a lot of times, like we saw in Pittsburgh, which was mind-boggling. You know, that was the one that's people are going to remember from this season. So, you know, Todd's you know, in-game management has not been good, but I think he kind of understands you have to kind of expect some struggles as a first-time head coach. To me, the more troubling aspect of Todd Bowles is the defense. You know, he came here with this reputation of being a defensive guru. You know, you heard about Arizona had all the injuries that year before he came here, and, you know, he figured it out, and he got people in the best positions. He had these great game plans. I haven't seen that. Frankly, I walk away from games a lot of times and think the other team has some great game plan. Like, I remember Seattle this year when Russell Wilson was on one leg. I came away really impressed with what Bevel did that day. He figured out a way to change his offense and make it work, you know, without Russell Wilson doing zone read things. And you never feel like that about the Jets. You never feel like, oh, wow, they really outcoached the other team. They came up with a great game plan. And as many faults as Rex had, He had a lot of them, but some of his defensive game plans, even when the team wasn't good, were brilliant. You know, I thought one of Rex's finest moments was in 2014 when that team was terrible. The defense had nobody, and he was playing Peyton Manning and the Broncos.
Right.
And he just dropped him in the coverage all day and said, okay, run. Go ahead, run the ball. You know, I'm not going to let Peyton throw. And he knew Peyton would see all those guys dropping and he'd hand the ball off. They didn't win, but they came close that day. And I thought that was a great coaching job. I'm looking for that. I'm looking for signs. He didn't manage the defensive line well, you know, with these guys and trying to get them all on the field in the 4-3, and that didn't work. And then, you know, being stubborn about it and not going back to the 3-4 quick enough, I thought, you know, he's why does Steve McClendon have to be on the field? You know, that was kind of my argument. So, you know, that
more work to be done, right? More work to be done.
Yeah, the defensive part of it scares me.
I think it does all of us. But hey, we I know you're busy. I know you've got a busy day today at Florham Park. So Brian, thank you so much for taking the time. And where can folks find you on the web or, you know, read your articles?
Yeah, nypost.com and at Brian Coz. COZ is my Twitter handle. So
all right.
Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian. Have a good day.
You too.
Great stuff from Brian Costello. If you have not read his article in the New York Post about that, are the Jets better off now than they were 2 years ago? Be sure to go find it. It's really, really insightful and asks some good questions. But now we're going to move on to our own NFL insider, where we bring in Ralph Vacchiano, who covers both the Jets and the Giants. So, Ralph, thank you for taking some time today. I know you caught up with Darrell Revis this week. How did that go?
Well, it was good. You know, one of the underrated things about Darrell Revis is, despite what has been relentless criticism of him all year long, and some of it, quite frankly, a little bit personal and mean-spirited, I think he's been very open about talking about his issues. And, you know, he's been a stand-up guy in a locker room that has a lot of cranky guys who don't necessarily like to talk when things are going wrong. He's never hidden from the fact that he's struggled. He's always faced the music, faced the press, and he did it again. So he was terrific, you know, talking about basically that he doesn't believe that he's done. He thinks he's got, as he put it, a lot more football in his future.
What did he give specific examples on that? I guess I'm curious
about.
I'll take the bait.
Examples
about why he thinks he has more football in his future. Did he say like I can't play to my level because I'm injured, or did he give any reason why the drop off?
No, he didn't say specific reasons of why he wasn't playing up to his standards, although he did admit that it wasn't up to his standards. And remember, those are pretty high. You know, I think he feels like he's not old. He's, you know, still got a few years left before a lot of guys would retire. He's said in the past that he came in out of shape this season. He's talked about in the past some nagging injuries that he's had. But mostly in his interview with SNY.TV on Wednesday or on Thursday, he said that, you know, he's got techniques and things that he has to clean up, you know, things that in the past haven't really been problems or issues for him. But for whatever reason, you know, he's noticed that he's not doing some of the things he used to do. And he thinks that if he spends an offseason really working on it, you know, I think we've all gotten the sense that maybe this past offseason, I don't think he said it, but it doesn't sound like he's been was maybe as committed as he should have been. I think he's, you know, a little embarrassed, and I think he wants to be committed this offseason, sit down with the coaches and say, there are fixable things I can do to maybe become the player that I was. Or, and I'll add this in, making this a completely long-winded answer, he may switch to safety, which he has been open about and was open about again in his interview with me.
I'm curious when, you know, sometimes, I mean, you've seen it a million times, I'm sure. You ask a player a question, they give you the, you know, the right answer, you know, for the media, but you can tell in their body language or just, you know, whatever it is, you can tell something else is going on or they're thinking something else. Like when you asked him about his future and playing with this team, playing with this Jets team, I mean, did you get the sense that he sees that this is his last year? Or, I mean, you can only tell by, you know, what he's not saying. I understand that. But, or does he just feel like, I will be back on this team next year? convincingly.
No, I think if I had to read into his body language and tone and all of the nonverbal things and even some of the words reading between the lines, I'd say that he doesn't want to commit to anything next year because he knows this has been a bad season. And at his age and the money he's due, there are a lot of variables. So, you know, we asked him if he would take a pay cut and he said, yeah, we'll see. Now, I certainly got the impression that he's willing to take a pay cut. And I think at his age and coming off this performance, he probably knows that he's going to have to take a pay cut. The reason you don't commit to it is because you don't know how much you're being asked to have that cut take. You know, he's going to want to, you know, he's guaranteed $6 million from the Jets one way or another next year. Is it fight? You know, this is a guy who's gotten every dollar he could out of playing in the NFL. Maybe it makes more sense to say, you know what, cut me and I'll take your $6 million and I know that I've got five other teams that are lining up to have me as a safety and I can do better that way. Maybe the Jets come in and say, hey, we only want to cut you to $10 million. You know, who knows? Mm-hmm. But there's enough things that haven't been said yet that he just doesn't want to commit to it. And also, honestly, at this point, he's played so poorly, I think he knows that it's certainly possible the Jets will say, look, you know, thanks, but no thanks. We just can't do this anymore. And so he just wanted to not be completely committal. Other than to the fact that he does want to play and he does not want it to end like this.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think this will be the ultimate test of, is Revis a mercenary like that everybody says that he is, or is he really committed to this game and this team, right? Remember he said when he came back to the team, you know, over a year ago, you know, he was so excited to be back and, you know, finish some unfinished business and all that sort of thing. And he's always been about, right? Like, you need to pay me what I'm worth right now. Like, that's what his career up until this year has always been about. And so, right, if he believes it on the way up, does he also believe that on the way down?
Well,
right?
The big difference there, though, is on the way up, he had the leverage to do it. And what we don't know, on the way down, he might not have that at all. All he's got in his pocket, the Jets are stuck a little bit.
He's going to get that $6 million, to your point, right?
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you're the Jets, do you want to pay him the $6 million and then watch him go be a safety for the Buffalo Bills? Or do you want to say, you know what, look, we got to pay him $6 million. That's a lot of money. Let's bring him around. Maybe he's good for the younger cornerbacks. Maybe he's good for, maybe he can play safety. Now, if he doesn't take the pay cut, you know, he's going to do whatever's financially best for him. I can't imagine, even if the Jets cut him all the way to $6 million, is he going to get more than that on the open market? That's hard to figure. He doesn't have that leverage anymore. Everybody saw the tape. Who's going to pay him $6 million to play cornerback next year other than the Jets, who have no choice?
Yeah, and I think you talk about safety and his interest in playing there, and I'm glad he's open to moving to other positions. But, right, like, part of it is that there was this early in his career, he was incredible at his willingness to you know, put his nose in on a tackle, on a running play or whatever. And if you've watched him at all this year, you know, he is getting out of the way. He's hiding behind other guys. He's trying to not get involved in tackles. And so it's like, if you want to play safety, like, you got to get back to that, you know, fire in your belly and go out there and make some hits, because whatever he plays, he's going to have to do that at either safety position. One of the other things that came out, I think Jason Cole had a report or something that I'm not a big Jason Cole fan, but anyway, something that, like, Woody Johnson said he felt betrayed by Revis. Did that come up in the conversation with Revis yesterday in the scrum or anything like that?
It did not. And honestly, I have not heard anything about Woody Johnson or the Jets feeling that way, which is not to say
it was a secondhand, like, third hand report on Bleacher Report. So yeah, whatever.
And,
yeah.
And look, it's certainly possible. Jason's been around a long time, and I'm sure I'd never rip anybody else's source because I just don't know the answer to that. I would be a little surprised if they felt betrayed. I'm sure they feel more disappointed than anything else. Idea that Revis has just quit, I don't know that he's doing that. He's obviously having a bad year. He's obviously frustrated. It happens, though. You know, to be betrayed by that, it's not like he's not trying at all. Could he give more of an effort? Yeah, probably. He's not a $15 million a year player anymore. And, you know, that's not his fault necessarily, as it is. Father Time has clearly caught up to him. you know, and the Jets are definitely frustrated by that. And that's a big reason why they have a big decision to make with him when the season's over.
Yes or no answer. Do you think Darrelle Revis is on this team next year?
Yes, I do. I'm not 100% behind that answer because there are a lot of variables, but I always come down to the financials. Assuming he's willing to take a pay cut, if you're the Jets, you're paying him $6 million. Do you want to have him on your roster or do you want to watch him go somewhere else? Either way, you're paying that money. If you have to pay him anyway, may as well keep him here and see what he can do. You know, what's the worst that can happen if he plays safety? He stinks and you bench him.
But you're paying him either way.
Right. And also, he's a pretty smart guy who's pretty good at playing cornerback. He could have a big impact on some of the young guys. He's not – I've seen nothing to indicate that he's a bad guy in the locker room. So why not keep him around if you're going to pay him $6 million anyway?
And yeah, might as well get the milk if you're paying. Yeah, you know, well, I don't know, whatever. I'm bad analogy, but
I know
but,
where you're right, going I'm, though.
I know what you're saying. Well, anyway, Ralph, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate your time today, folks. You can be sure to read Ralph on SNY.TV with his awesome Jets and Giants coverage. And Ralph, where can folks find you outside of that?
You can find me on Twitter as well at RVacchianoSNY and. On pretty much every SNY show during the week. We do a lot of reports, of course, on Geico Sports Night. So make sure you tune in.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ralph. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Well, that was fantastic. It was really interesting to hear Ralph's insights and thoughts, you know, having been eye to eye with Darrelle Revis yesterday and also to hear Brian Costello. So thanks to both of our guests. Thanks to Brian from the New York Post. Thanks to Ralph from right here on SNY. And that'll do it for the show this week. Obviously, the Jets have a Monday night game against the Colts. This should be interesting. I don't know how it's going to go, but obviously there's always things to talk about. Corey and I will be back next week, Tuesday. You can plan for us on Tuesday to do the post game show. So be ready to get your late night rants lined up for the Tuesday show next week. But that does it for us this week. On behalf of Corey, who's out this week, you can follow Corey on Twitter at Corey Griffin NBC. You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Bassett, and then our guests Ralph and Brian. You can find them on Twitter as well. So be sure to do that. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week. Make the Jets great again.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.